Welcome to the Confluence of Ideas, a Confluence Investment Management podcast focusing on key geopolitical trends and their investment implications. Now is a great time for an update on the case for hard assets, an investment destination that's drawing considerably more interest these days. Confluence Advisory Director Bill O'Grady has focused on commodities for years, and I think it's fair to say Bill is recognized as an expert in this area, and Bill has always been patient with my questions on this subject, so I'm looking forward to our discussion today. First, Bill, hard assets resides in the Confluence universe under the umbrella of alternative investment strategies. Can we begin by looking at the makeup of the current portfolio?
Certainly. The decisions we make from a macro perspective is first to determine what classes we want the portfolio to hold. We tend to have four: precious metals, industrial metals, energy, and agriculture. This is a hard asset portfolio, which means it favors commodities that come from the ground as contrasted by those created by the ground. Agricultural commodities are created by the ground and thus have short supply cycles. Therefore, our exposure to the agricultural sector is mostly limited to agricultural minerals such as fertilizer components. Currently, we hold three of the four, with precious metals representing about 42% of the portfolio, industrial metals 29%, and energy 27%. We also look to the equity to commodity relationship as well. In other words, in this portfolio, we can either hold the commodity itself via ETFs or related equities. That allocation depends on the class. For example, in precious metals, equities are typically a more leveraged position compared to the metal itself. Thus, usually, if we're bullish on precious metals, we hold more equities and less bullion. In energy, it's the opposite. Stocks tend to be less volatile than the commodity. Industrial metals are similar to energy. We are currently holding 14% of commodities to equities, with all of that in precious metals. And within the classes, there are subclasses as well. For example, within precious metals, you can hold gold, silver, and the platinum group metals. Within industrial metals, there's copper, iron ore, aluminum, and others. And with energy, you have crude oil, natural gas, coal, and uranium.
Has the composition of this portfolio changed in recent months?
The overall class allocations have been generally stable, but within precious metals, we have moved from bullion to equities. The run-up in gold this time has been historically anomalous. Usually, bull runs favor equities, but this bull run has mostly been driven by central bank buying, as foreign reserve managers have been attempting to diversify their holdings from treasuries in the wake of the Biden administration's decision to freeze Russian foreign exchange assets after the invasion of Ukraine. Recently, the equities have started to catch up to the bullion, and so we have allocated into precious metal mining equities and are holding relatively less bullion. We have also restricted our crude oil exposure. We take the administration's goal of lowering oil prices seriously. Although Washington can't keep oil prices lower indefinitely, they have been relatively successful in depressing the price.
Has your outlook for the performance of this portfolio changed?
Well, I remain bullish on this part of the market. We may see some movement between and within classes, but the overall macroeconomic and geopolitical structures, we think, favor these assets.
Well, Bill, let's drill down on some of the reasons why hard assets look more appealing these days. First, major power rivalries and regional segmentation would seem to be an emerging long-term trend, or what economists might call a secular trend. How do hard assets benefit under this scenario?
In a couple of ways. A world with a functioning hedgeman that is willing to provide the reserve currency and reserve asset on demand is an efficient world. This means that arbitrage is relatively easy to execute, inventory requirements are minimal, and there's little fear of supply disruption. But if the hedgeman becomes less dominant, efficiency becomes a secondary goal and resiliency dominates. In such a world, holding precautionary inventory looks prudent. Securing supplies of key resources, perhaps using military force, is also common. A world with a less reliable hedgeman means commodity demand rises. Secondly, as we have noted, a world with a less reliable hedgeman is less efficient and thus prone to higher inflation. If governments refuse to address this inflation tendency with austerity, inflation expectations expectations can become unanchored. This means investors will seek inflation protection. Hard assets have historically done well in such environments.
Bill, recent statistics reveal that U.S. assets like treasuries and stocks are still in high demand worldwide, even as China reduces its holdings. Some of this demand might be abetted by a weaker dollar, notwithstanding very recent strength in the dollar caused by war in the Persian Gulf. Is a weaker dollar another long-term trend that ultimately favors hard assets above treasuries and U.S. stocks as investors look to them for value?
Well, treasuries are hard to replace in the global system. They're liquid and widespread. There really is no alternative. But if foreign holders begin to fear they are unsafe, they will have to create alternatives, even if they're less than ideal. For most of this century, U.S. administrations have increasingly relied on financial sanctions to coerce nations into complying with U.S. goals. The two nations at most at odds with the U.S., Russia and Iran, have essentially been frozen out of the dollar treasury-based financial system. The extensive sanctioning of these two nations raises fear among others that they too may fall afoul of America at some point, and so we are seeing official flows out of treasuries. Interestingly enough, private holders are still buying treasuries. The use of financial sanctions and the general instability of U.S. foreign policy have increased interest in diversifying out of the dollar treasury system. There are not a lot of alternatives. Gold is clearly one. Other precious metals are as well. This instability is making dollar investing less attractive and thus leading to a weaker currency.
How about supply issues? It takes a lot of time to discover and then actually mine these assets. There can be plenty of complications along the way which prevent easy marketability. Do we have a supply shortage that will be around for perhaps years and keep the prices of these assets high?
The history of capitalism is that capitalist nations get more output with less inputs. That doesn't mean demand falls, but it usually doesn't proportionally keep up with overall growth. That being said, there are periods where commodity prices rise relative to overall price levels. Wars, which we'll discuss in a minute, tend to boost commodity prices in two ways. First, war production lifts demand, and second, war disrupts supply chains, leading to hoarding, which drives up prices. The other factor that lifts commodity prices is currency debasement. The term gets bounced around a lot, so we should take a minute to define what we mean by that. In my opinion, debasement is best defined as the process where currency holders believe the money they hold today will have significantly less purchasing power in the future. Perry Merling, a noted monetary economist, says there are four prices of money. The first is that money has the same price across mediums. For example, a bank deposit and money in your wallet are equal. If they are not, or depositors fear they won't be, you get bank runs. The second price touches on the debasement issue. Price of future money is interest rates. If the interest rate doesn't fully compensate the perception of high future prices, holders of currency today will seek alternatives. The third price is foreign exchange. And finally, the fourth price is what money is worth in goods and services. If conditions exist where holders of a currency feel that the current interest rate doesn't fairly reflect expected future prices, holders of that currency will seek alternatives to protect purchasing power. Commodities are one way to address this problem. Of course, if demand rises due to debasement fears, it takes a while before there's a price response. There's an old adage in commodities that nothing cures high prices like high prices. In some commodities, the supply response is quick. For example, in grains, a high price will trigger higher planting usually within a year or so and prices will fall. On the other extreme, opening a new mine can take up to a decade before the ore hits the market. That's why we focus on hard assets. They have a long supply response.
Let's return to the issue of war. You've noted how wars boost commodity prices. Conflicts have always been with us, but they do seem to be more foreboding these days. How does this impact the appeal of hard assets?
Well, you're correct in saying wars are common in human history. We ascribe to hegemonic stability theory, first discussed by Charles Kindleberger, who argued that the world worked better with a functioning hegemon. The hegemon provides financial stability by providing or supporting the global reserve currency reserve asset system and also provides geopolitical stability in the form of preventing wars. When a hegemonic system fails, you usually go through a period of global unrest before a new hegemon emerges. We have been arguing for some time that we are in that situation. The U.S. political class has failed to develop a hegemonic system that has domestic support within the country. Our position has been that eventually the U.S. either will dramatically change the role or abandon it completely. Now, at this point, we don't know which path will be chosen, but in either case, the relatively benign system that emerged after World War II is over. As we noted earlier in our discussion, this will likely lead to widespread conflicts, key commodity hoarding, and inflation, all factors which support hard asset values.
Factoring in shorter-term events like recessions, which have always been periodically with us, how does the expectation of a recession impact the way you manage the hard assets portfolio?
Well, I will tell you, managing recessions is the most difficult element in managing this portfolio. Even in the 1970s commodity bull markets, prices fell during recessions. Overall, demand declines during recessions while supply is driven by long-term factors, thus prices tend to decline. We usually allocate the portfolio into large cap names within the hard asset space and add actual commodity ETFs as well, which tend to be less volatile compared to equities. In addition, there are some equities in this space that are less sensitive to overall commodity prices in general, such as aggregates firms.
How about the reality bill of accelerating government debt around the world?
High levels of government debt are now resolved via financial repression. Historically, there have been three ways to address debt problem. First is austerity. You cut spending and you raise taxes, which, as you can imagine, are unpopular. The second is repudiation, which is unpopular with creditors and can't be done often. The third is repression. You keep the borrowing rate below the growth rate of nominal GDP, and you force various entities to buy your debt at negative real interest rates. You might also create bonds that are non-marketable and require some firms to own them for regulatory reasons. Financial repression is usually inflationary because it creates conditions of debasement.
Bill, within your portfolio, watching and weighing all of these numerous factors, what are some of the main ways you divide the potential winners from the losers?
Well, we usually start with a top-down approach and examine our outlook for energy, agriculture, industrial, and precious metals. And based on that analysis, we sketch out overall allocations to these classes. Then within these classes, we decide our allocations to commodities compared to equities. And from there, we look for attractive companies in each class. Since we don't go short, we don't necessarily go looking for losers other than to try to avoid them.
Looking at the goal of the hard assets portfolio, where exactly does it fit in an investment plan?
Well, in a traditional 60-40 portfolio, you would only have an allocation if you thought that particular equities, such as miners, oil companies, for example, were attractive relative to other equity sectors. However, we position this portfolio as an alternative asset, so a manager may have a 60-30-10, with the 10 being alternatives. Alternatives could encompass hedge funds, commodity trading advisors, private equity, real assets, etc. Although some portfolio managers will try to use hard assets only when there is inflation concern, we felt our portfolio was not a response merely to inflation, but to the end of the American way of hegemony. We felt confident it would happen, we just didn't know when. The debasement inflation issue that develops from a deteriorating hegemonic situation creates conditions which you think favor having hard asset as a semi-permanent allocation. As inflation rises, the diversification impact of fixed income is diminished. Although this can be somewhat offset by shortening duration, adding hard assets as an alternative allocation makes sense.
Would you say that protection against inflation is a major attractive feature of this portfolio?
It is, but it isn't the only reason. Debasement is perhaps the biggest issue. If our definition of debasement holds, where money today is significantly more valuable than money in the future, then this portfolio offers protection even if current inflation is relatively tame.
As we begin to wrap up a current war-related question, investors rushed to the perceived safety of the dollar as the war with Iran got underway and intensified during that first week. Have you been surprised by this, and does it challenge your overall investment thesis regarding hard assets?
Well, the move to the dollar is not at all unusual. On the other hand, war is generally good for hard assets. As the U.S. steps back from its post-war hegemonic role, wars will become more common, and supply disruption will affect commodity prices. In this event, energy is a clear winner, but over time, agriculture could see higher prices too, as the Persian Gulf supplies a significant amount of the world's fertilizer. The dollar's rise does adversely affect precious metals. However, the dollar's strength could be offset by policymakers. For example, if the Federal Reserve opts to keep rates steady in the face of rising inflation, we could see the dollar retreat from its recent rally.
Final question. Do you think it might be time for a broader range of investors to consider the hard assets portfolio?
Well, Phil, you know, that's a bit like asking your barber if it's time for a haircut. But yes, the changes occurring in America's management of its hegemonic role suggest to us that conditions are in place in favor of this portfolio.
Thank you, Bill. To learn more about the Confluence Investment Management alternative investment strategies, you can access confluenceinvestment.com and click on the Products and Performance tab at the very top of the page. Just to the right of the Products and Performance tab, you will see the Research and News tab. And by clicking on this, you can scroll down to Current Perspectives for a written update on the case for hard assets. Our report today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. This information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.